At Highland, we're all about celebrating little wins and little ways to innovate digital processes. There's no customer pain point too small for us to help with. Maybe that's why more than half of the Fortune 100 looks to Highland to connect their content and data, improve processes, and turn little efficiencies into big wins for their customers and clients. Highland, intelligent content solutions for innovators everywhere at highland.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
I'm Commander Shepard, and this is my favorite lorecast on the Citadel.
Welcome to the Mass Effect Lorecast, the podcast where we explore the vast lore behind the Mass Effect games. Welcome back to the Mass Effect Lorecast. I'm your host, Tom. I'm here with Sam and Seven, the legend. Sam, we're back. We're back to doing lore episodes again. We had our patron episode recently, and now we're back to the lore. How's it going?
That's right. Yeah, we covered Saren, so I think it's only right we talk about his right-hand Asari this week, Liara's mom, Matriarch Benadryl.
Benadryl. Matriarch, yep. Benadryl.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I don't remember that one.
Cousin to Commando Zyrtec.
We're just going to start naming drugs or over-the-counter medicines. Oh, man. Yeah, Captain Aleve was... I don't know. But anyway, yeah, so we're talking about Liara's mom. This is a weird intro. I mean, we're back in this. If some of you are probably like, well, you guys are doing this late. Yeah, we missed the regular show. We're back. This is a Saturday. It feels weird to do this on the weekend. Does this feel different to you?
It kind of does, but kind of not. But also because I took this Monday off. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
All right.
It's still a Friday to me in some ways, but yeah.
Okay. So we're actually talking about Matriarch Benezia?
Yes. Matriarch Benzodiazepam, as I'm Genesis says here in chat, not okay. Twitch. Now, yeah. Matriarch Benezia. Yes. That's who we are talking about.
Let's do like we did with the other ones, because normally we go back and we talk about like the early stuff, right? The stuff that shows up in the books or the comics, the things that are whatever. Let's just get into it. What is the earliest stuff we know about Benezia? You're going to make me want to see Benadryl every time.
So the origins of Matriarch Benadryl are basically she doesn't show up in any of the comics, books, or later games as a flashback, right? But she and Matriarch Athida, so another matriarch we later meet in the games, had given birth to Liara in 2077.
2077, the year of yes. Cyberpunk.
Dextra Deshawn was Liara's midwife.
Weird. I wouldn't have anticipated that he was the one that would be the midwife. He has a very diverse and storied career, it seems.
Don't make assumptions, I guess, Side-Eye. What'll it be, Liara? Short life of glory? Oh, Blaze of Glory.
Somebody needs to mod him into a Mass Effect game. That would be amazing. All right. So anyway, it's so back on track.
Okay, wait. Before we go forward, would Dexter Deshawn be a Volus or would he be a Krogan?
I was just picturing him as a human, but yeah, I guess he could be something else. He's kind of a rotund fellow, right? He's kind of roundish.
He's so, quite rotund.
He's quite rotund. He's got a little heft on him.
Think he's got a breathing problem?
I mean, I like him as a Volus. I do like that. What do you think?
Okay. Well, back on topic.
All right.
So, that was 2077, and we're joking about the timing because I was curious about what was going on in the Mass Effect universe at that time, and you know what the answer is? Well, we don't really know. The closest event that we have to that year in the Mass Effect universe is one that we've already covered. It happened in 2075. It's called the Manswell Expedition.
Yes! It has been at least a year and a half since we've talked about the Manswell Expedition.
Victor Manswell.
Victor Manswell.
Bet you didn't think this would be coming back and we'd be talking about it yet again. But this, as a refresher for everyone, Victor Manswell was this rich guy who was frustrated at humanity's pace of space exploration before they discovered Mass Effect physics, so he launched his own expedition and using cryogenesis. You can go back to the earlier episode where we talk about it. It's weird, it's totally unrelated, but I had hoped that I could find some other insightful galactic event that had shed light on how Benezia and Athena truly met. Because I was like, you know, hey, how did Liara's parents meet? And unfortunately, there's just no clear answer to that. But on the bright side, this timing does give us some insight as to how old Asari matriarchs are, the ones who are alive during the Mass Effect trilogy. Because it wasn't for another 70 years after Liara was born in 2077 that humanity would discover Mass Effect physics and then unlock the Charon Relay. And by that time, Benezia and Athena would have already been matriarchs or close to it. So that means that they have already lived several hundred years. And when Shepard meets them in Mass Effect 1 and 2, respectively, it also means for Benezia and Athena that Shepard and the rest of humanity really are like not just the new kids, but they're new kids on the second day of school.
Yeah, okay. I thought you were going to say on the block.
New kids on the block. There we go. Now we owe someone royalties or something. And I don't know how that works, but but seriously, like in the grand scheme of things, they're several hundred years old and humanity just came in the scene. What? 70 years or so after Liara was born, meaning that like humanity's presence on the galactic stage is younger than their child.
Yeah, that's crazy. I mean, they are from the old school being before humanity was even a thing anybody was worried about outside of Earth.
Right. It's kind of surprising that Athena and Benezia didn't talk down to Shepard and more like, you know, hey, didn't you guys just discover fire yesterday?
They use like baby language. Like when you talk to an infant, you're like, hey, you boo, 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 boo. Hey there, Shepard. Oh, come on, Shepard. Come on. Walk to mama. Walk to the matriarch. Right.
Someone needs a nap.
Yeah. Oh, somebody's grumpy today, huh, Shepard? That would be a totally different gameplay experience.
Right, because like Shepard is an infant in terms of age compared to Liara.
Right.
If so, you are Benezia or Athena.
All right, okay. So before we get any further, let's discuss what actually an Asari matriarch is. Like, what does that really mean?
It's basically a wise woman or a sage for the Asari culture. Any Asari who lives long enough will enter the matriarch stage of their life around 700 years old. It's like the grandma stage.
Wow. Okay, so somebody who would be a matriarch today, like today's date, has been around since like before the Renaissance for us.
Wow. Yeah.
I mean, think about that. That's a long time.
could recall. I don't know who was, what was going on in the Holy Roman Empire during that time? Was that
1300s? Oh my God.
I was thinking 1024 because 1,000 years, right?
Oh, 1,000 years.
Yeah. Life, a life.
Oof. But even if you go 700, like even 700 is a long time ago. Like, yeah, I mean, that was like firmly the Middle Ages. There was a lot of people, you know, doing things about farming and being peasants and lords bickering over land. I mean, like, there wasn't a whole lot going on back then.
Right. Yeah. And that's assuming that would be an Asari. But if it were like an 1,000-year-old human being, if human beings could live that long, I feel like progress would take longer. But we talked about that in the Asari episode.
Yeah.
So basically, the matriarchs are Asari for when they have traditionally already settled down. They have already formed a family, and now they devote themselves to civic duty, political, religious, or theological causes. And they are revered as having the most amount of experience because they are the oldest. You know, they've lived the longest, and therefore they have more wisdom than most other Asari. At least that's what the collective belief is. So we're led to believe, as players, that many of them have also served as valued advisors to political or corporate leaders, if they're not the leaders in those realms themselves. And they can also be spiritual teachers.
Can you imagine having a conversation with somebody that old and thinking that you're going to say anything new at all that they've never heard before? Like,
if you managed to make a sorry matriarch laugh, you should put that on your resume.
Right, right. It's like, I don't know. We could go into side stories. I don't want to derail this too much. But there's that feeling of, like, as I get older, I less and less am surprised by the conversations that people have, by the kinds of things people say. And I'm like, oh, yeah, that's a good joke. You know, like, I'm less likely to just be like, oh, my God, I've never thought of that before. Right? Because you gain this experience over life. 700, 800, 900, 1,000 years of experience. They've got to be just rolling their eyes at everything. And it explains the attitude in the game. They kind of are like that, right? There's kind of this like, all right, kind of
extreme air. Centrism.
Right. Like there's this air to them of like, all right, well, I'll talk to you, infant, you know, like.
Yes.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. If you were, you know, it comes back around though, at least for human beings, I feel like, because have you ever laughed at something that you're like, that's so trite and so stupid that I'm laughing like ironically?
Yeah.
And then you start laughing because you're laughing. But then like, if the other person thinks, oh, I said something genuinely fun, like, no, not quite.
Right. Right. This is, I'm laughing at the meta reason, not at the thing that you think I'm laughing at. Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So, I wonder if that's, you know, why we don't see many Asari laugh, because after like 100 years, haven't you pretty much heard every joke?
Right, right. That's the thing about humor, is it's the thing that is unexpected, but you feel like, oh, I should have thought of that. That seems so obvious now. But yeah. So these matriarchs, they have kind of this special place in society too. Like there's kind of the pseudo-religious thing going on.
Yes, it's kind of similar to the concept of a guru from pan-Indian traditions in our own world. The character Shiala describes herself as one of Benezia's followers. Acolyte, I think, is a term that's tossed around. But this doesn't really go for everyone. They are individuals, so they can buck societal trends when they want to. Case in point is Liara's father, quote-unquote father, Athida, is a good example, because she's a matriarch, but she's working as a bartender in Mass Effect 2, because she doesn't really care to dispense any wisdom for society.
Man, can you imagine? I keep thinking about it. Like, yeah, if I met like a 1,000-year-old guru who seemed to really know everything, seems pretty worth following along, or at least watching his YouTube videos or something, right? But then can you imagine a 1,000-year-old person like, oh, I just want to bartend. Like, but yeah, bartenders are also dispensers of wisdom at times, so that could be a thing too.
They are. And I was going to say, I would love to have like a 700, 800, 900-year-old bartender, because can you imagine the drinks they'd make?
Awesome. Can you imagine how old the tattoos would be on their arms? But anyway, back to Benezia. Is there anything else we know from before the games?
So Benezia doesn't actually have all that much screen time in Mass Effect, so almost everything that we know about her even from before the games is secondhand information, which means we can trust it or we can take most of this information with a grain of salt. It's your choice. But we know even among matriarchs that Benezia was prominent and had garnered quite a following. So I was doing a little bit of time analysis and considering that Mass Effect 1 takes place only 106 years after Liara's birth. She's 106 years old in Mass Effect 1. I'd guess that that would mean that Benezia had already gained some significant cultural or political influence by the time she had Liara. And maybe this implies that she had Liara later in life than most Asari even have children. Because most Asari are having children in their matron stage. So it goes the maiden, matron, and matriarch stage. But most Asari are having children in that matron stage, which would be younger than 700 years old. It sounds like that Benezia may have had Liara later in life. Liara is an only child. I can only imagine that this would mean that Liara feels a certain way about her mother that maybe a lot of Asari don't feel.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's probably similarities there. My parents were relatively young because they had me in their mid-20s compared to some of my friends' parents who had them much later in life. And there's even among humans, there's that different feeling when kids have older parents than if you have younger parents, right?
Yes. I mean, my mother was 42 when she had me.
Yeah. So by the time you're a teenager, they're almost seniors, you know, like. That's a very different experience than, you know, like when I was a teenager, when I was 15, my mom was 39. Like, I think she had me at 24, you know, like that. She still felt like a young parent compared to some of my friends' parents.
My mom was technically old enough to be your mom's mom.
Right.
By the time she had you.
Yeah. So like, but that creates a completely different experience. And so I would imagine that Liara would have a very different experience with her mom than most of the Asari would. So there's probably similarities among only a very small group of them compared to what most people experience.
Yeah. We also know that Benezia raised Liara as a single mother. And because she and Liara's quote-unquote father, Athida, had separated. And because Liara tells us that she never knew her father, it must have been when Liara was very young that that happened.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. So is there anything else we know about?
Yeah. Well, Liara thinks part of the reason that they separated is because there was shame that Liara is a pureblood. The fact that both of her parents are Asari, and that's highly stigmatized for a number of different reasons.
Yeah.
The possibility of creating Ardat Yakshi, not the least of them.
Right. So she's even more of an anomaly among the Asari. Older mother and pureblood. At the same time.
Especially, well, and if her mother is in this prominent political or cultural role and then is also known to be having a romance with another Asari and creating a pureblood child, that could be extremely taboo. So that could be part of the reason that they separated. But we later learn from Athida that their separation may have been partly due to differences in how each of them really viewed the galaxy and their duty as a matriarch. Benezia apparently valued upholding the status quo, kind of acting as that guru I talked about and forming political alliances. But Athida is very clearly a free spirit who has left Thessia, which itself is taboo for matriarchs to do.
Right. Yeah, that makes sense, especially because she's a bartender. She's picking a very different life path. So do we know what kind of mom Benezia was?
Liara was her only child, so all we have are Liara's memories, which can be biased. But they are what they are, and Liara remembers her mom as being gentle and loving before they suddenly stopped talking for years. Here's what Liara tells Shepard in Mass Effect 3. We have a clip to play thanks to JJock33 on YouTube.
I love this part of the Presidium. It reminds me of where I grew up.
Where's that?
Armali. Back on Thessia. My mother and I lived beside a park. I spent hours there.
Doing what?
Reading, exploring, getting in trouble digging for ruins in the grass.
You're kidding.
I was very young.
Yeah, that's actually pretty cute.
No one else thought it was funny, Oh, the lecture my mother gave me. But she did buy me my first history book the next day. I miss her, Shepard.
What was she like?
She was confident and kind. She loved to wear yellow. I thought she was the most beautiful woman in the world.
The history book reference there is interesting.
Yeah. Yeah, right. That must have meant something sentimental to Liara. And it also, like, it's not like she's handing her, you know, a candy or a sweet or some kind of toy, you know. It's very evident that Liara's mom is encouraging her to value education.
Yeah. Yeah, those kinds of influences on young people will last their entire lives. It's interesting we're getting these little snippets of things that were formative in Liara's personality, but connected to her mom. That's cool.
Yeah, this is sweet, and you can see the natural progression of why she takes up the academic field of archaeology and studying the Protheans. And we know from Liara that there was a certain pressure being Benezia's daughter because of Benezia's prestige. So I'm not sure entirely how much of that pressure encouraged Liara to kind of run away and seek solitude in the Prothean ruins. I mean, we're led to believe that in a certain way, but there's also some things timing-wise with Benezia's ultimate involvement with Saren that could have played a role, and we'll get into that after the midbreak.
Yeah, so don't go anywhere. And this is a very different midbreak, at least from the most recent ones, because it's the return of the planet cards. What?
We need a sound effect for planet cards.
Planet cards, planet cards.
Guitar riff.
All right, don't go anywhere. We'll be right back.
Our bodies come in different shapes and sizes, so doesn't it make sense that our weight loss plans should too? That's the beauty of Noom. They build a personal plan that factors in dietary restrictions, medical issues, and other personal needs so your plan works for you. Noom doesn't restrict or shame when you want to treat yourself. Their flexible program focuses on progress instead of perfection. You don't have to give up carbs or anything. And with their daily lessons, you can learn something new about your food choices every day. After just a few days of using the app, I learned how to recognize cues for overeating and how to choose the right foods to feel full. Stay focused on what's important to you with Noom's psychology and biology-based approach. Sign up for your trial today at Noom.com. That's Noom.com. And check out Noom's first ever cookbook, The Noom Kitchen, for 100 healthy and delicious recipes to promote better living. Available to buy now wherever books are sold.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Corient. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.
Message coming in. Patching it through.
I am sovereign, and this
Lorecast
is mine. I like the sound of that.
All right, here we are in the middle of the show. We've got to thank our newest patrons for signing up at patreon.com/MassEffectLorecast. Welcome to the Patreon. Rajantic, I think is how you pronounce that. And Tynal, welcome. So glad that you're here. And we have to shout out our Shepherd tier patrons, Edboy, Kiracy, Lieutenant Tosino, and William. Thank you so much for being here. To all 63 of our current active patrons, and you can always go on there as well and sign up as a free patron. You don't get all the stuff, but you can be plugged in and see what kinds of stuff you can get, like t-shirts and stickers and all sorts of fun things. So go check that out. Also, we have we do usually read out reviews. We don't have a new one this week, but if you do leave a 5-star review on Apple Podcasts, we'll read that out on a future episode. Plus, you can rate the show on Spotify, tell your friends. All of that stuff is super helpful. So thank you to everyone who has supported the show in every little way. It's because of you that we're able to keep doing this. So thank you so much. And Sam, we're talking planet cards.
What? We are, yes. Just came across this planet the other day when I was playing Mass Effect, and I thought, wow, this is not one that I've read very often. And of course, if we've covered this already way in the past, I know one of our listeners is going to be like, guys, you already said that one. And hopefully not. But anyway, Angana. Angana is a hot and beautiful and deadly world covered with debris of ancient starships. It's approximately 127,000 years ago, a series of battles were fought over it by two organic species, the Thoi Han and the Unusanan. The Unusanan might sound familiar to everyone. They were the Protheans of the Protheans. They were the forerunners.
These all sound like medicines because we've been on this like medicine kick. Like,
ask your doctor if Inusanan is right for you.
Yeah, yeah. Do you have a hard time going out in public? Are you embarrassed to meet new people? Do your nerves get the best of you? Try Inusanan. Ask your doctor for more details.
Inusanan. There we go.
There you go.
Maybe it's like a oh man, what's that skin condition that I always see pharmaceutical ads for? Anyway.
right. Yeah. Yeah.
The rest of the planet card is, although no records of the conflict remain between the Thoi Han and the Inusanan, most historians agree that both races wanted to colonize Angana and neither were willing to share. The two lost hundreds of ships in a series of battles over Angana and its moon, Baraya. Many of these were eventually pulled in by the planet's gravity well. The Mass Effect drive cores of these ships broke apart, dumping refined element Zero over large stretches of landscape. This poisoned the environment and a wave of extinctions followed. Many of the animal species that remained showed a tendency to develop biotic powers. As the ecology of Angana is energetic and aggressive, this makes colonization a deadly peril.
So I'm getting this picture of like, all right, we built the house. Yay, we colonized. We built our new house. Let's move in. And you're moving in. You're like, crap, we've got mice. And then you're like, oh, it's just a mouse. It's fine. And then the mouse starts using biotic powers and blows a hole in the wall in order to create its little.
Where's the cheese?
Yeah. All of a sudden things start floating around the room and you're like, stupid mice.
The mouse took your trap that you left out personally. Yeah. And now you're going to pay for it.
Yeah. Biotic mice or even just like biotic like giraffes that just like bend the trees toward them. So it's easier to get the leaves, you know, like.
Biotic cows.
Biotic. What would a biotic cow do?
Steal your money?
Because cows need money. All right. All right.
I don't know why. I don't know why they need money.
That's weird.
Maybe biotic pigs.
Biotic pigs. That
they're already intelligent, so that would be concerning.
Or dolphins, like creatures that don't have like hands to do things with. All of a sudden, they have biotic power, so now they can like manipulate the world better around them. I would imagine dolphins would like float out of the water and then like
right.
Yeah.
they could keep water inside their biotic field, maybe.
Oh my god! Like, yeah, yeah, or like fish, they could just create a bubble around them and then just float around in the bubble.
I don't need fish that can go on land; they can stay there.
Yeah, right, right. All right, so that's Aingana. Also a weird word. That's our planet card. Hey, back to planet cards. Who knows? Maybe another planet card will show up next week. But we've got more to talk about with Saren and Venezia, so don't go anywhere. We're going back to the regular part of the show.
Spit it out, or are you trying to build suspense?
You're so dense, sir. Obviously, I do not know as much about human relationships as I thought.
All right, so we've got the little bits of stuff that we know about the pregame story. And then we have Venezia meeting Saren. How does this happen?
So we know that Venezia is tied to the company Binary Helix. That may sound familiar to players because of Novaria in Mass Effect 1. I've seen online that Venezia was a, quote, executive secretary for Binary Helix and was Saren's, quote, executor. Whatever that means, to be honest, I don't know. I've yet to pinpoint the source of this specific detail, but it is safe to conclude that Binary Helix is how Venezia and Saren met, because Saren was also a key investor and apparently held a lot of sway in the company, given just what he's allowed to get away with. But now that we... That may be how they have met, but it doesn't exactly describe how Venezia found out about Saren's Reaper plans. We find out through Shiala, the green Asari, if you remember her on Pharos, who gets pooped out by the Thorian, that we find out from her that Venezia apparently wanted to stop Saren's plans. Here's a clip of that conversation from YouTube, credit to Epoch Video.
In time. My name is Shiala. I served Matriarch Venezia. When she allied herself with Saren, so did I. Venezia foresaw the influence Saren would have. She joined him to guide him down a gentler path. But Saren is compelling. Venezia lost her way.
Are you saying Saren can control minds?
Venezia underestimated Saren, as I did. We came to believe in his cause and his goals. The strength of his influence is troubling.
I love the delivery of, are you saying Saren can control minds?
Dun, dun, dun.
Like, right?
Yeah. Yeah. Not quite. Almost, Chip. You like, almost got it.
It seems like a weird jump. Like, but then again, humans haven't been out in this galaxy very long. They don't know what everybody's capable of. But like, are you saying Saren can control minds?
I would love to role play like Idiot Shepherd, who just jumps to conclusions.
Yeah, right? Know? Right. Yeah. Did Saren blow up the entire galaxy? Well, Shepherd, if he did, none of us would still be here, so obviously no.
Are you saying that Shepherd and Saren are in bed together and they secretly planned the second American Civil War?
Are you saying that Shepherd and Saren have a secret romance and I'm Shepherd?
Well, only in Saren's mind? That's why he did all of this? Oh. There are some people who want that to happen, by the way. I've seen them on Twitter.
This would be a wonderful addition, because you know how in certain Fallout games you have like your intelligence is low enough and you get like the idiot responses? We need to have an idiot version of Shepard in the future games, or whoever yes. The main character is, right? Like, oh man.
Random encounters, that would be fun in the next Mass Effect. But anyway, yeah, we get this idea from Shiala that Venezia was not this mindless henchman just going forth and executing Saren's will, but she was also one of his and Sovereign's many victims. And not just that, but that Venezia actively wanted to bring him back toward the light, that she was rather selfless in that regard. Now, we don't know what her exact intention behind doing this was, as in, you know, we didn't get a chance to ask her, but we do know, and we don't know whether this was because Venezia cared about galactic peace or if she just cared about Saren personally.
So when exactly did this happen? Like, when did Venezia devote herself to trying to save Saren from this? Like, what's the actual time frame here?
So this is a really interesting question, because obviously it had to have taken place before Mass Effect 1. So before the year 2183. But the answer is never specifically told to us. It's something that I had to do a little bit of analysis for. So I may get some details wrong, but, you know, people can let me know if that's the case. Logically, it has to be after Saren meets Sovereign because Benezia is responding to Saren's indoctrination.
Right.
So had to have been sometime after that. And if you remember, Mass Effect Revelation ends with Saren discovering Sovereign. Mass Effect Revelation, that takes place around 2165. So that's 18 years before Mass Effect 1.
When Shepard was an actual child.
Yes.
Right.
Shepard would have been 11 years old.
Yes.
Roughly 11 years
old. Yeah, that's crazy to think about these time frames. But yeah, okay, so 18 years previous.
Yeah, that means that Benezia could have been following Saren for up to 18 years before Mass Effect 1, trying to convince him to stray from his path. It could have been shorter than that, but this is the most specific answer that I could find. That unless I'm missing something, Benezia could have been spending up to 18 years of her life with her followers too, traveling with Saren, fighting off indoctrination, and pleading with Saren to really do the same.
And that's a long time to devote to that, especially for somebody like Saren. I mean, but the Reapers end up indoctrinating her too, right? Like there's this like tragedy in there.
Yes. Yes. That is completely tragic because we know that she's now spent basically a generation, a human generation, following around Saren, and it leads her to try and breed this Rachni army for Saren once she has become indoctrinated too. She does this through her connections in Binary Helix, and that's where Shep and possibly Liara confront her for the first and final time.
Why does Saren need the Mu Relay?
He believes it will lead him to the conduit. I would tell you more if I could, but Saren did not share his counsel with me. I was merely a servant to his cause.
You can still make it right. Give me the information.
I was not myself, but I should have been stronger. I transcribed the data to an OSD. Take it, please.
Knowing the relay's coordinates is not enough. Do you know where he planned to go from there?
Saren wouldn't tell me his destination. But you must find out quickly. I transmitted the coordinates to him before you arrived. You have to stop me. I can't. His teeth are at my ear. Fingers on my spine. You should.
Mother, don't leave! Fight him!
You've always made me proud, Liara. Die!
It's a good scene.
the delivery of that final word, yeah. Die.
Die.
Yeah. Yeah, man, it's kind of, looking back, it's just kind of hard to take a lot of that conversation seriously because it's just like, here's a fuck ton of cleavage right in your face.
right? Yeah.
You know?
There is that.
Does anyone else feel like that? I mean, come on.
Yeah. Yeah.
But that was a strategic choice by some on the art team. But thank you to Kahala-chan Gaming for that clip. We fight Benezia right after she says die, and this time it's final. And she has no more willpower to go on, right? You can tell she has this internal struggle going on in her mind. Mm-hmm. She says goodbye to Liara after that fight. She calls her Little Wing, and she expresses this profound grief that she doesn't see a light at the end of the tunnel, proverbially, as she's dying. And, you know, she says they always said that there would be a light, you know. So that's kind of disturbing. It's sad. You start to wonder how much of that is because of indoctrination, right? Is she not seeing a light because the Reapers would still control her body after she passes? Yeah, it's just sad.
Yeah. No, it's interesting. It's also interesting that their culture still has a similarity in seeing like a light. You know, like death and seeing a light, that kind of thing, that we humans would have a similarity to that.
Yes. And we will definitely have to talk about Asari religion in maybe a future episode. But so Benezia seals off part of her mind from this indoctrination, and she's breaking free from it just really at the final moments. You remember just a couple episodes ago, we talked about in regards to Paul Grayson's indoctrination and how he was trapped inside his own body, mm-hmm. And he was watching himself say these things. He was watching himself do these things, but it wasn't him doing it. And I can't imagine what it was like then for Benezia, watching her body say the things she did, do the things she did, and having no control over it.
Well, even the terminology, his fingers are on my spine. Did you say teeth in my ear? Something in my ear?
Yeah. Yeah. Basically that,
ugh.
That very visceral imagery,
yeah.
That I only have control for a little bit and the enemy is at the gates.
Yeah, they're grasping back at me and I physically can feel it. It's not just in my mind. It's like it's affecting my body as well. It's just like this idea of being under your skin, that kind of thing,
Right. Yeah. And like total control of their brain and nervous system. Yeah, it's very scary. So you contrast how Liara remembers her in Mass Effect 3, when she was saying she looked amazing in yellow. She was wonderful. She gave me a history book, mm-hmm. And you contrast that with their strained relationship in Mass Effect 1. And you start to consider if indoctrination is really the reason for Liara and Benezia having not spoken in years. That you remember Liara says, mm-hmm. I haven't spoken in years with my mother. And then after Benezia's death, Liara's just purposefully stoic and not vulnerable with Shepard, or she genuinely doesn't care that much that her mom died. I think it's the former, because she knows that she can't open that bag of trauma and grief right then and there. They have a mission to see through and there's really no time for that level of sadness.
Yeah. And it's complex. Like if the reason they are distant is because of the indoctrination, there's the processing of like, okay, well, what parts were my mom and what parts weren't? Did I even really know her over the last 18 years or whatever? And how does that affect the way I felt about her growing up or as a child? How do you reconcile? It's like going through certain tragedies in your own life. Like I've been through a divorce. There's that feeling of like, well, I'm not really cool with this other person anymore. There's a lot of friction here, but didn't we used to get along? Weren't we used to, how do I have these memories of these good times when we were in love and everything seemed wonderful? And justifying that and trying to find a place in it is a very complex thing. So I would imagine it makes sense that she would kind of be internally dealing with that without having to explain it too much. And then maybe by Mass Effect 3 starts to reconcile it a certain amount and say, okay, no, there were good things about my mom. I do remember these things from the past. Who she was in the last few years isn't necessarily the same person, and it's not necessarily her fault.
Yeah. And it takes years of reflection, to come to that point. I think it's a different kind of pain for someone if they love someone and that person becomes someone else.
Right.
Than yeah. if that person were to just pass away being still that same person they remember.
Yeah. Yeah.
So that's a different kind of pain, and it's a burden that Liara has to carry with her. But my conclusion basically on Benezia's character is that she's this distinguished Asari. She's a good mother who encouraged Liara to pursue a strong education. She led a difficult home life, and she got divorced maybe because society wouldn't approve of her romantic partner. She was a selfless person, clearly, for having tried to convince Saren to come back to the light. And maybe she perhaps thought she could save Saren, and in doing so, she lost her own life to indoctrination.
Yeah, truly a tragic character, somebody who would have been very interesting to have met decades before the whole Saren thing, right? Like you have to wonder, what was she like 30 years ago, 40 years ago, 300 years ago? Like, who was she really at her core that we never really get to witness?
I think she was personally more there are little hints, I think, that are left that would indicate that Benezia is so much more important to the Asari civilization than we actually know. For example, in Mass Effect 3, Liara knows somehow knows about this temple and the artifact under the temple in Thessia. And she knows things that like an average Asari wouldn't know. This is like a state level secret, right?
Yeah.
But she doesn't quite know all of the details there. But anyway, the reason why she would even know about these things, you know, she reminisces and talks about being brought back there when she's a child. And anyway, there's just some hints that maybe Benezia was very, very well connected and very important to the Asari civilization, at least important enough that Athida spies on Liara in Mass Effect 1 on behalf of all the other matriarchs, because they're concerned that this prominent matriarch's daughter would have connections tangentially to Cerberus through Shepard.
Yeah, yeah. No, it's a complex web. It would be interesting to know more, but this seems to be as much as we can know. So that's as far as we can go, right?
Yeah. Yeah, that's about it.
Yep. All right. Well, thank you for tuning in. I hope you've enjoyed this episode. We're back to the lore stuff. And Sam, do you have an idea of where we might be going next week?
Yeah. You know, I have heard many, many people ask, when are you going to start talking about Liara? And the connection between Saren and Liara was Benezia.
Yeah.
So we're going to be starting talking about our episodes of Liara, but as most people know, Liara is so pervasive throughout the entirety of Mass Effect lore. This will be many episodes long. I'm not sure how long. Maybe we'll try and break it up with some other topical episodes in between. But yeah, we're going to start delving into Liara's character.
Would you say that she's, I mean, this may be a controversial thing, but is she the second most important character after Shepard?
She, you know, I want to say yes.
Somewhere
it's
in there,
only because
second or
of
third?
Liara.
Yeah.
It's only because of Liara, really, that Shepard is alive.
Right.
By the end of Mass Effect 3. So maybe, I don't know, we'll have to kind of examine the details of Liara's importance throughout those episodes and maybe come to that conclusion a little bit later. I also have this loose idea for next week, maybe on a potentially Valentine's Day themed episode that we'll have to talk about offline.
All right. And no, it doesn't include us doing anything romantic together. We're both in committed relationships. And so that's not going
to, I'm sorry. I have to resist the temptation. Yes.
Yeah, me too. Me too. You're a wonderful friend, but I don't see you that way. Stop making up things, internet. Nobody's actually making, these are all jokes. Nobody's making up anything. There's no,
I'd be so uncomfortable if I saw some kind of weird conspiracy YouTube video about that.
Did you know that Tom and Sam have a secret romance? Oh my God. No, that's not a thing.
Did I just empathize with like celebrities infinitely more popular than me?
All right. Well, thank you for being here. Sam, you have other stuff going on you want to share?
Yes, I am continuing to stream my personal canon playthrough of Mass Effect 2. In fact, I am about to start streaming it right after we're done here on the Lorecast.
Yeah.
It's like the second that we're done, I'm hitting live. You can go ahead and follow me on Twitch at N7TheLegend. I also send out notifications on Twitter at the same handle.
Awesome. Yeah, go check out Sam's stream. So if you're here, welcome. Thank you for being here for the live show chat, and if you want, go jump over there. We're wrapping it up. Go check out Sam's stream, and of course you can find my stuff at robotsradio.net. I do a bunch of other podcasts, and there are a bunch of other shows on the network that you should check out. So robotsradio.net. I'll see you next time. Stay safe out there. Bye everybody.
Thanks for tuning into the Mass Effect Lorecast. We'd love to hear your opinion and thoughts on the lore of Mass Effect. Reach out to us on Twitter at Mass Effect Cast, or check out the Robots Radio Discord. Also, you can send us an email at masseffectlorecast@gmail.com.
Support for this podcast and the following message come from Coriant. Corient provides wealth management services centered around you. They focus on exceeding your expectations and simplifying your life. Corient has been helping high achievers just like you enjoy their lives more fully, preserve their wealth, and provide for the people, causes, and communities they care about. As one of the largest integrated fee-only registered investment advisors in the U.S., Corient has deeply experienced teams in 23 strategic locations. Corient has extensive knowledge spanning the full spectrum of planning, investing, lending, and money management disciplines. Leverage Corient's exclusive network of experts
to craft custom solutions designed to help you reach your financial goals, no matter how complex they may be. Real wealth requires real solutions. For more information, connect with a wealth advisor today at Corient.com. That's Corient.com. Corient.com.
As humans, we're naturally driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. When I was looking to hire someone, it was so slow and overwhelming. I wish I had used Indeed. If you need to hire, you need Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform, with over 350 million global monthly visitors according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. And Indeed doesn't just help you hire faster. 93% of employers agree Indeed delivers the highest quality matches compared to other job sites, according to a recent Indeed survey. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/podcast. That's Indeed.com/podcast. Terms and conditions apply.